Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, everybody, I'm Chris Mannix from The Vertical, and welcome to The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, where I check in with some of the top players, coaches, and analysts covering the NBA. My guest this week is Zach LaVine, Minnesota's rising shooting guard and two-time winner of the NBA Slam Dunk Contest. I asked Zach about his early interactions with Timberwolves coach Tom Thibodeau.
The main thing he said he knew how I was on offense. He wanted to cut down a little bit on, you know, just bad shots get better. I'm getting more on the offense, and you know, it's understandable.
And if we will see him go for a third straight slam dunk title.
I got to think about it. You know, it takes a little bit of time to practice, but I'm always confident. I think I can do it again.
All that and more coming up next on the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. Well, I don't know who the most athletic player in the NBA is. Russell Westbrook is on the list. Aaron Gordon is on the list. But the guy sitting opposite me right now is definitely way up there on that list. Tell me if I have these numbers right, Zach. The 41.5-inch vertical, was that at the combine?
Yeah, that was at the combine.
But then I saw a video. What was it, the Lakers workout where you were at 46 inches, right?
Yeah, that was the highest I got. 46. I got 45 a couple of times too. So
is that's as high as you go? 46?
46 is the highest I got. And that's, you know, I think that was pushing. I was amped up a little bit.
Are you the most athletic player in the NBA?
I don't know, man. There's people like Russ, like you said, and LeBron. Mm-hmm. But you know, with the confidence you have to have as a player, you know, when you step on the court, you got to think that way. You know, I think I'm fastest, strong, not strongest, but I think, you know, athletically ability. I think when you step on the court, you got to think that way.
I had a scout that watched you at UCLA who told me he's never seen someone go baseline to baseline with the ball as fast as you do.
Yeah.
that kind of speed. Like, I mean, there are different types of speed. You can have track star speed, but who gives a damn?
You're in the exactly, NBA.
If you can't do it with the ball, it's a bit of a problem.
Exactly, yeah. You know, I'm just gifted from my parents, I guess. You know, my dad was a former NFL football player. My mom was extremely athletic. And, you know, if you work out on those type of things, trying to become more athletic, it's, you know, it comes into your game.
Was your mom a softball player, baseball player? Was that?
Softball.
Yeah.
You know, I had three brothers, so, you know, she was always getting pushed.
Were you the athletic star of the family growing up?
Yeah. My little sister's athletic as heck, too. And, you know, she's a girly girl, though. She ran track. She only lost about two races. And, but, you know, I think she saw what me and my dad were going through in the backyard and all the argument and the talking and all that type of stuff. So she didn't want to deal with it.
Your dad was a football guy. Did he want you to play football too? Or
no, that was the craziest thing. When I actually did play football, I'm expecting, you know, after the games, you know, for the criticism or, you know, the what you did wrong. He had no expectations for me. I'm like, why aren't you yelling at me? He's a, you know, I didn't expect you to be good at this. So it was fun.
He was a USFL guy, right?
USFL, he played for the Seahawks for a couple years too.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's where I came from, Seattle. So.
He had any good stories for you about those days?
There's too many stories, man. From him growing up to, you know, him, you know, his last couple of days in the NFL, you know, they're all great stories.
You must have been, I mean, because you were so athletic as a kid, you must have been good at every sport. Or, I mean, it must have been pretty good at least at every sport.
I was decent at, you know, I was better at baseball than basketball growing up.
That was man, my base paths must have been. How many steals did you have in a season?
That was my stuff. I was stealing bases. You know, I was a center fielder, so I had pretty good range. Mm-hmm. That was amazing. My dad actually was drafted in baseball.
Really?
Yeah. I talk about athletic. My dad, man, he can still play me one-on-one. So,
and he's a big dude, too, right? I saw him at, what was it, the Rising Stars Challenge. That was he'd steal the mic during that, that press conference
him.
Yeah,
there. That was him. Yeah, he's huge, 6'4", 6'5", 300 right now, you know. Got the belly, but, you know, he's still strong as an ox, so.
What position did he play in baseball?
He was a first baseman, okay. And he played outfield as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Football outside linebacker.
So if you're playing, if you're good at baseball and you're good at basketball, what drew you stronger to the basketball side at the end?
The main thing, it was just exciting. I was giving up when I was younger. I think I got invited to like some all-star games for baseball to go to California. Mm-hmm. And I turned it down to go play in-house at my Rotary League for basketball. Dad was like, yeah, we got to stop this. He's like, you're not making the right decision, so we don't go with basketball.
So you could play like an all-star game in baseball, but you play basically glorified pickup in
basketball. I picked that one, yeah. So that's what I was doing.
How? I mean,
I mean, legitimately, you must have had, you must have been able to steal a base at any point in time.
It was, I was pretty good at, yeah. I, you know, pitchers didn't like, you know, I got a single or I got a double. I turned a lot of singles into doubles and triples. So
when did you realize that your athleticism was just on a different level than kids your age?
To tell the truth, it didn't really come into my game until I was about a junior or senior. I was always fast. Mm-hmm. That was the main thing. Still not the strongest person, but I worked on, my jumping ability and my speed, you know, on the field doing football workouts. And I grew to be about 6'4", 6'5", my senior year. And that's when it really came into my game. Because my sophomore and junior year in high school, I was about 5'10", mm-hmm. 6 foot. You know, I was a point guard, you know, just running up, shooting the ball a lot. And using your, you know, basketball skills to get around people, floaters and stuff like that. And then when I started getting taller, it was like, you know, I can dunk on this dude now. So it changed.
First time you dunked?
First time I dunked was in eighth grade.
Eighth grade, okay.
Now that's why I was 5'10". I went up and dunked. So I was like,
okay, so you were pretty athletic in eighth grade.
Yeah,
right?
I was athletic. Yeah,
I was 5'10 in eighth grade. Now there was no shot I was coming near the rim.
Went up and dunked with my left
hand.
I'm
tapping the backboard at that point. Yeah. I'm doing that crap, that little kid stuff. So eighth grade, was it just like, you know, was it a game or was it?
It was in a jamboree. I was playing with my high school team. And in just a summer league game, and I got a fast break and went up to lay it up with my left hand. I just turned it over and dunked it, and the whole crowd was just like stunned. It was like, yo, this kid's in eighth grade. So then I didn't dunk again consistently until like my ninth grade year.
Did you surprise yourself then with that dunk, or was it just like, oh my god, I'm up in the air?
I was tripping. I was like, I don't know what I just did. My dad was cracking up. He said, your look on your face is ridiculous. So you know, it was a lot of fun.
You what's something that you were able to do athletically, maybe it's in that junior senior year that or even beyond, that's even impressed you, that you've been like, holy shit, I just did that?
Basketball wise,
it could be, I mean, it could be anything, I guess.
Athletically.
Did you have any like Blake Griffin jump over a car moments?
No, I had nothing like that. I used to race I ran like a 4.5 in high school. Mm-hmm. You know, like a 40-yard day. It was a hand time. I used to run with the track team a lot. And that was the main thing. And then I broke my high school's unofficial record because I was just praying with the track team of the 100-yard dash. Like a 10.9 or something like that. And mm-hmm. I didn't even run track. So that was, I think that was the athletic thing. I was like, oh man, this is a, I didn't know I could do that.
it's like football player speed right there. The 40-yard dash stuff.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, so it was kind of cool.
You were a Kobe guy growing up, right?
Yeah, that was my guy.
Yeah. Was it just because, I mean, he was like that generation's Jordan, like for me anyway?
It was all that. It was just the way, I heard a lot of stories about how he practiced and, you know, his determination, his mindset. And that's what really got me, his killer instinct. I heard he was the hardest worker. He was cocky. He was arrogant. You know, that kind of drew me. I was a big Barry Bonds fan. That kind of drew me to like their personalities a little bit. But then just the way he worked hard and his game, man, you know, you see dudes turn around shooting the ball left-handed, mm-hmm. you know, against the Mavericks, 63 in three quarters. So it's just like, you know, these guys are incredible.
We always know the guys that can evolve their game, that, mm-hmm. you know, come into the league as one thing and go into it. Those are the guys that are great, that are always great. I mean, even like a guy like Michael Redd, even as an example, he came into the league as a non-shooter. George Karl said, you're not going to survive unless you can shoot. And he leaves as one of the best shooters in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, Kobe's like, I mean, Kobe wasn't the low post player. He wasn't didn't have that Jordan turnaround until later in his career.
Yeah, he worked his ass off for mm-hmm. him, man. That's what he does.
What did you try to adopt in his game? What have you, something you watched him do that you'd like to have in yours?
The main thing I went for is pull up. You know, I use that a lot. One dribble, two dribble, pull up, and you know, being able to use your athletic ability to get to the baseline and jump straight up or fade away from a defender. You know, you see him stop on a dime and just get up in there. Michael Jordan was great at it. And, you know, I did a lot of that growing up with my dad, one dribble, two dribble pull-ups. But, you know, outside of that, just his hard work ethic. You know, that's why I try to pat myself on, just being one of the harder workers.
You get into the league and Kobe's still there. And you played the same position. I mean, what was that first matchup like?
It was great. You know, I was so hyped. I got in the game. I had a really good game, too. It was in L.A. I went to UCLA. Mm-hmm. A lot of my family was there. You know, he was guarding me in the fourth quarter, and I took that as because I remember, you know, he used to guard the best players, mm-hmm. you know, in the fourth quarter. So that was really humbling to me. you know, we came out winning that game as well. So then the next couple of years playing against was really cool.
Is it not cool to tell him how big a fan you are of him at that moment?
I never told him.
Okay.
Yeah, the most he probably would hurt for if he ever did was just an interview like this. So I've never, you know, on the court, you know, I'm going at that guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's you got to, because he's going at you.
I mean, that must have been a surreal moment, though, just to stand next to him for the first time.
Out of his mind. Yeah. My dad said it was, my eyes were wide open, but, you know, it was good.
And you were, this is a different era, but I was reading somewhere that you were a Space Jam guy, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you did that for the dunk contest with the t-shirt there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an early 90s movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
I wasn't even born yet.
Yeah,
when that
you're
came
going
out.
Way back.
That was, you know, it was really creative for me to do that. I was thinking, like, who doesn't like Space Jam?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to, you know, incorporate that with a dunk and, you know, give homage to, you know, Mike. So that's what I tried to go with.
You know, there's Space Jam, too, apparently.
It's coming out, yeah,
working
right.
It's LeBron
coming out.
I mean, they had other players.
Hopefully, I can get a scene, man. You know, a little snippet. I can act a little bit.
Going to UCLA and being kind of a one and done, was that the goal? I mean, did you think that was going to happen when you signed on there?
I really didn't know until you know. I didn't think I always confident, but then playing in the summer with a lot of NBA players, you know, you're going against the former UCLA, like Drew Holiday, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Love, and then we're out there, and then a lot of Josh Shipp, Aaron Follow, you know, you're playing against them in the summertime, and, you know, I'm hanging, I'm doing good. It's like, man, I'm competing with, you know, these are NBA players, you know, it's an all-star right here, and so it's a, that's when you start getting your mind, so, okay, maybe I, you know, if I continue to work hard, I can be on that path.
How intense were those? Because there's like 90-plus, not currently, but 90-plus ex-UCLA players that have played in the NBA. You just named a bunch of guys that are all-star caliber guys. I mean, what are those scrimmages kind of like?
It was intense. You know, dudes, they go right at you. And, you know, they know that you're the next generation of people going to the NBA. So, you know, just how I look at it now, whenever I play somebody, you know, going back in the summertime, you know, you want to make an imprint on them and let them know that, you know, you're still, you know, like that alpha dog, you know. So Russell Westbrook could go be going right at people, Drew Holiday, you know, and, you know, we got to fight back. You don't want to show any sign of fear.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they are kind of testing you in that way. I remember Jared Sullinger and Evan Turner telling me about the workouts with D'Angelo Russell at Ohio State. And they would say they used to knock him down and knock all these other guys
go
down
right
and notice
him.
Who would get up first and notice who would want some more. Did you get the sense that, you know, going up against those guys that, you know, they were maybe feeling you out a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. You know, the first I remember I was guarding Aaron Flow, the first player, you know, I talked to him about last summer, actually. You know, it went right at me, put me right in the post, a couple fadeaways. It's not sweet down here, young fella. You got to get ready for this. I'm like, man, you know, okay. And you just got to go right back at him. And it's you know, it's a humbling experience first couple of times.
So you and Russ, when Russ is back there, how much interaction did you have with Westbrook while you were at UCLA?
While I was in college, you know, you just say what's up to him. You know, you know, a college player, you see Russell Westbrook, you kind of, you know, a little shy to it. But then you playing against him, you talk to him in the game, talk a little smack. But other than that, though, you know, I think he was doing some of his workouts on the other court. So, you know, a lot of us were just watching, you know, seeing what he does so good to, you know, make him.
Mm-hmm. I'm always interested in the decision a guy like you makes to come into the draft. You know, you're a first round pick, but are you in the top five, the top 10? Are you in the lottery? It turns out you
such
are.
Such a big range. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. I mean, how complicated is that for you? I mean, were you when did you make the decision? When did you decide? And what was the driving factor in your decision to come out?
The main thing for me is, you know, I feel like I had, you know, the confidence and the ability to go to the next level. That's what we all dream to go to. And, I felt like I would have had a better process of me becoming a better player in the NBA, going against pros, practicing against pros, you know, not even thinking, you know, you don't come in and be a, you know, a big time role player or something like that, but just going in there to continue to evolve your game. And, you know, the confidence just took me there. You know, that was a decision I made. It was pretty much after the season. You know, you see, of course, where your name is in the draft and, you know, who's looking at you. But you just got to go for it. That's what I did.
How many people are in your ear in those, you know, what is it, a couple of months after the season ends or maybe even during the season that are either telling you one thing or the other?
I mean, so many people you hear it on, you know, from social media all the way to, you know, NBA.
Oh, that makes it worse. Like Twitter,
it's
telling you should definitely come out, Zach. It's
so many different scouts, you know, agents. And, you know, the main thing, I keep my circle tight. And I listen to my father, you know, my inner circle, my mom, my uncle. So they're the main people that are talking to me. And, you know, they So the decision's on you. And, you know, that's what I went with.
How does a guy like you handle social media and Twitter? I mean, how often do you look at your mentions?
When I first came out, I was really into it. You know, you always want to be able to, you know, get your following up and stuff like that. You know, you're young. I'm still am. But, you know, it seemed like it was 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I looked at them a lot, but now not as much. I turn my notifications off. You know, you can still see some people, you know, the critics or something like that. Sometimes that drives you into the next game or puts you in the right mindset. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you try not to worry about that stuff.
What was the, was there a something that some idiot said or something that so you said, all right, that's enough. I'm turning my mentions off. I can't handle this anymore. Because it's a lot of noise. It's a ton of noise out
there. It was when I declared or when I said I put my name in the draft, there's a lot of people, you know, you're horrible. You don't go to the D League. You're not this. You're not that. You know, you won't even get drafted. You know, that point. I was like,
and
know,
these are the UCLA people that are pissed off.
It's some UCLA people. Yeah. It's like, man, I just shook hands with this guy the other day. You know, so I just signed an autograph for him.
His picture, his Twitter avatar is a picture of next to you.
Yeah. He's like, exactly. Yep. Horrible. Like, what are you doing? So, you know, you just got to learn how to, you know, get through those.
Is that what have you found that's what most guys, like either on your team or in the league, do when it comes to that stuff? Do you know guys that keep their stuff on, the Twitter mentions on, and read it all? Or are most people like you, do you think?
I think it just depends on what the type of person it is. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're really active on social media, like I don't tweet a lot. I don't share a lot of pictures, mostly with me. Like, I don't tweet at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at it, you know, just to see what's going on in the world or in sports. I use Instagram to post pictures about my family and sports and, you know, me. But other than that, I don't really go on it a lot. You know, there's people that tweet about everything. You know, they're watching the Boston game. They're tweeting. You know, tweeting. I can tweet at other people like that. So I don't do a lot of that.
You were drafted back end of the lottery at 13, right? Mm-hmm. And was that kind of where you thought you were going to be? Did you expect to go any higher? What was that draft night like for you?
I was really, you know, my range was so weird. I mm-hmm. was anywhere from 5 to second round. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was really weird for me. I didn't know what to expect. I thought I had a really good draft process going through the workouts. You know, I thought I impressed a lot of people, and you know, I'm thank God where I landed at. You know, I feel like it was a really good situation.
There's so much manipulation of the process. Like when I was doing the draft for Sports Illustrated, you know, I knew I'd have executives telling me something, so mm-hmm. I'd write it so maybe somebody else would read it and that guy would fall a little bit.
Exactly.
It's all this kind of game that goes on. I mean, did you have to, during those months, did you tune that out or did you fall victim to reading everything?
When it comes to being drafted, you're looking at a lot of different mm-hmm. things. You know, your agency's telling you different things. You know, your parents are looking, you know, there is your son. So they're looking intent on the internet. Oh, well, you looks like you're going here now. Looks like you're going here. Oh, your stock is here. So, you know, you're hearing it from everywhere, but you just got to, you know, just go through the process. The main thing is I just did what I could. And, you know, if you can't handle something, you can't really worry about it. So mm-hmm. I just tried to enjoy it.
So Minnesota drafts you. Mm-hmm. What's your immediate reaction? Was it happy? Was it uncertain?
I was so shocked mm-hmm. that my name was on the board. People took it the wrong way. And, you know, I can see I wish I had a better reaction now. But, you know, for the people who knew me, they're like, oh, man, he doesn't even know what to do right now. I was, you know, it's your lifelong dream. My dad as a little kid, you know, Zach LaVine with the first pick, you know, da-da-da. Mm-hmm. You know, I was going through all that with my dad. So, you know, for me just to see my name on the board, you know, I was trying to hold it together. I was trying to like, hey, Dad, don't cry because I'll lose it. You mm-hmm. know, I was shocked. So, you know, that's how it was for me.
But that organization, a rebuilding organization, was that the type of situation you wanted to go to? Was it something else?
At that time, I didn't even realize what it was. I was just so happy to be drafted, you know, and then I started looking into it. Like, okay, this is, you know, they're looking for me to do this and come in and help here. So, you know, it was really cool. And then the trust they had in me was, you know, it was a big thing.
Andrew eventually finds his way to Minnesota in that offseason in a trade. And you guys, same draft. I mean, how quickly did that relationship develop and what was that like?
A lot of people didn't know. We went through the draft process together and we have the same agency. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we went through the workouts together in Santa Barbara. So we were already pretty close, mm-hmm. you know, hanging out a lot. And then, you know, I was at the table right next to him when he got drafted, extremely happy for him when he went first. And then to see he actually got traded to us, you know, it was kind of funny because we were talking about, man, you think we could ever be you know, on the same team in this draft, you know, you go second, I go 12th, or you go first, I go 10th. So it was really cool.
Yeah, you were at those P3 workouts, right?
Yeah, we were all working out.
There needs to be an NBA team in Santa Barbara. Like, man, they need to put an NBA team right there. Move the Lakers. I don't care. Santa Barbara is where it's
at.
I
want them to go back to Seattle.
Okay, so, but if there's another expansion team, they got
to
do two.
You want them to go to Santa Barbara?
I want them to go to Santa Barbara. I love it. I've done a couple of stories on guys that would come through the draft out there. And every time, you know, it's at your agency when they say our guys are working out here, I get a little excited.
Yeah, no, it's a great place to work out, man. It's relaxing. And, you know, you can focus on what you need to do.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
And now a word from Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Fast, powerful, and completely online, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts out of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/Mannix. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030.
Hi, boys and girls. It's Tony Kornheiser reminding you to subscribe and listen to my daily podcast, where we talk about everything from sports to politics to the impending animal revolution. And remember, you can listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play.
More athletic, you or Andrew Wiggins?
Man, I don't know. He got so many different things. You know, he got the hands that helped him out a lot, man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a 6'8 freak of an athlete, fast, strong. And I don't know, man. It's a toss-up. That's one of my best friends. So I don't know. Like I say, I always pick me, but he is right next to me.
You win 16 games in that first year. I mean, that's, I'm assuming, a level of kind of losing that you're not used to. Up until that point, I mean, how hard was it to go through that?
It was totally different. You know, coming into the league, you're not knowing what to expect. And, you know, it's a struggle at first. You've always been on winning teams, number two teams in the country, you know, AAU at college, you went to the Elite Eight, you know, so it's different. But then you just got to, you know, you just keep going with the process and trust in your team and in yourself.
I mean, that's the right way to think of it. Was it hard to kind of implement there? I mean, you get into January and February, mm-hmm. and they're kind of piling up, March, yeah. And they're kind of piling up there. I mean, that must have been just interminable those months.
The games just keep coming, so you just got to know that, hey, they're not feeling sorry for you. You know, the rest of the league is, they're trying to get their wins, they're trying to get their spots. And, you know, we got to go after those guys. The main thing is we didn't act like we were in a losing situation. We went out there and competed every game we had, you know, gave ourselves our chance to win. And even though we weren't winning, you know, we went back and looked at the tapes. And, you know, just like we do now, you know, if it's a loss, you go back, see what you did good, get it did bad, and then evaluate from there.
You put up some pretty good numbers in that first year, but when did you start to feel like, all right, this is gonna work for me? Like, it's because not every rookie comes in, yeah. and it works out. But when did you start to realize that I'm gonna be an NBA player?
You know, every rookie has their ups and downs, mm-hmm. and same with mine. And then probably after the All-Star break, I started getting a lot more consistent minutes, and I went through a stretch where I was really, really, you know, on top of my game, or where I knew I was like, man, this is coming a lot easier than it was, you know, mm-hmm. 4 months ago to me. I think right around that March, April, you know, from there on, I was like, you know, I think I got this, you know, down. At least I can continue to just improve and get better and better.
You played big time college basketball, Pac-12 college basketball. How big is the difference between big time college basketball mm-hmm. and NBA basketball?
100% different. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes, you know, there's no zones in the NBA. That was the main thing. You know, there's a lot of zone. You know, I'll come in, I'm, you know, skin sit in the corner, you can just shoot threes, or mm-hmm. you can come in, and 3-point line is pretty much now like a pull up. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot. Dude's not like DeAndre Jordan that's in the lane. And, you know, that's playing Nerf basketball with the hoop. You know, just sitting in the lane. So that's the main thing. You know, the athletically is totally different. The strength, the speed, and then, you know, the coaching is, I think, is a complete 360 degree flip.
And that's why I always hate the argument that the best college team could beat the worst professional team. That's nuts to me.
Not even close.
It's totally nuts. No, like Kentucky close. Could beat Philadelphia last year. I mean, that
blown
no way.
Out.
Blown out. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's
not even
it's,
close.
It's men versus kids.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can be the greatest kids in the world, but you're still nowhere near what you're going to be.
Yeah, I don't believe in that either.
Mm-hmm. You go into next year and you know, I'm assuming you guys are thinking we're going to take another step, and you lose Flip early in the training camp. And what was that like for you?
It was crazy. You know, you deal with losses in your family, and you know, for somebody that, you know, picked you, I was his pick, and you know, trusted in me, came out to Seattle, worked out with me, and you know, I was really close to him. It was hard. You know, you just gotta, it's just life experiences though. You gotta be there for, you know, his loved ones, his family, and you know, let him know that you're there. But, you know, we still have his spirit and his drive, his determination. You know, this is his team still. You know, a lot of these main players that are here, you know, he put the team together. And, you know, it's very unfortunate, but, you know, we got to continue to, you know, live on his legacy.
Did you have any kind of last kind of conversation with him in the months prior?
The last thing, he was out, he was in summer league, and he was coaching the whole summer league team. You know, he was perfectly healthy.
Yeah.
You know, I think he was going back and forth. You know, I think he had a couple visits with the hospital, but he was coaching the team. And, you know, he's exactly looking good, you know, keep getting stronger. He was talking about how skinny I looked and, you know, getting the weight room and stuff like that, keep getting stronger. But, you know, you never know how life goes.
Sam was his assistant, so, you know, there's a lot of the same philosophies there. But, I mean, how much did that happening? And it was October, right? It was right before.
It went quick.
Yeah. I mean, how much did that kind of short circuit the season last year for you guys?
You know, the first half, you know, it was a lot. It's two different coaching styles. You know, Sam was a great coach, one coach of the year in Toronto, but you know, two different coaching styles, two different philosophies, and you know, it was a little difficult to get used to at first, and then you know, then you just gotta go in and trust in your team and the process and your organization. Like I said, we might not have the best season, but we didn't act like that. You know, the team was still together. We were close, and you know, we were going in competing every day.
I always wondered what impact Flip's death had on KG from people that are in that locker room. I mean, KG came, you got about a season and a half of him there, and you obviously knew how close those two were. I mean, what differences did you see in Kevin from that half season that you're with him with Flip and then that one season without?
The main thing was, you know, the half season, we were just trying to get to know, you know, Ticket. It was, you know, he was coming in, you know, from New York or from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we heard a lot of stories about, you know, KG coming in, you know, and be a dog in the locker room, you know, no cell phones, you'll throw your phone out of here. And to tell the truth, me and him clicked real quick. You know, we were really close. I sat right next to him. I sat in his locker, actually, so I was scared. I was like, yo, I don't want to sit here, move me lockers. And, you know, I asked, he's like, nah, young fella, you good. So, you know, he was great. And then, you know, going to that next year, is just the way he prepared and everything like that. I didn't really see a difference, but I knew it took a toll on him. You know, you could see after he passed, it was hard.
He scares, I think, reporters as much as he scares young players there. I mean, I can tell you when, and I've told this story before, but when he was with Brooklyn, I was supposed to write this story on how the whole trade happened, and Paul Pierce was great, and the Celtics were great, the Nets were great, but Kevin doesn't want to talk about any of this crap. Yeah. He doesn't want to go, like, revisit it.
Yeah.
So I found out that he was a huge Boardwalk Empire fan, like, okay. Loves that show. And I cover boxing, too, so I had a connection with HBO. So I had them send me, it was, like, September, I think, and had them send me the entire season, the advanced copy of the season.
That's
so
smart.
I'm like a kid with keys at a child, like, well, like, Kevin, I've got these DVDs.
Look at these DVDs.
I've got these DVDs. Can you want them? He's like, what's going to cost you? I'm like, just let me walk to the parking lot with you. Like, let me walk out with you and answer a few questions.
Yeah.
And that's what I got. I got my 5 minutes worth from Kevin.
Was it worth it?
It was worth it. He was, when he gets going, and you know this from.
He don't stop.
Yeah. And he's actually pretty insightful. Like, you know, whether it's telling a reporter what's going on or what he's thinking, or I'm sure, you know, knowledge being passed on to a player like you.
Yeah. It's all from the heart. Mm-hmm. You know, the main thing, he gets so devoted to it. You know, we've had sessions where he's just talking about life, you know, staying after practice or after games for an hour, hour and a half, or, you know, he's showing us one move and it turns into a whole him going into his book. You know, it's, all right, I did this, okay, you know, pivot here, you know, so it's great. You know, he helped me out a lot, and, you know, we still communicate still.
So he wasn't hard on you, or was he?
No, he was still hard on everybody. You know, he made sure he set the tone in practice. you know, whenever anybody was lacking or slipping, he definitely got on, let him know, and that's what a leader does.
He was still that type of practice player, even at his age and what his body was doing to him?
Regardless, he had the same mentality. He was the first one in the weight room. You know, even though he wasn't the same player, he was still the same. His mind was the same, mm-hmm. you know. So he would sit on the sideline and be more into the practice than somebody that's playing 5-on-5, you know. So he's calling out all the ices, all the screen. You know, he wasn't playing yet. We can hear him from the bench. You know, yeah, ice left, you know, drop down. So it helped.
So is there a lesson that you took away from him that you still use to this day, whether it doesn't have to be something specific, but a practice habit or something that you do?
Just try to go out there and give it all every day you have. Mm-hmm. You know, he said you never know when it'll come to an end. You know, he said them 20 years flashed before his eyes mm-hmm. like never before. You know, I was messing with, I was like, man, I was 1 year old when you were drafted or when you were in the league. I was one. So I'm here sitting here playing with you. And so he said, yeah, just go out there and chase your dreams, man. You know, you can be whatever you want to be if you put the hard work in.
Do you think he was done at the end of last season? Did you get a sense that it was over?
I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I thought he actually was coming back. I really did, and you know, I'm extremely excited for him and his family. You know, him spending time with his kids, mm-hmm. his wife, and his new show on, you know, the Area 21 is great. You mm-hmm. know, it's perfect for him. So you know, I'm extremely happy for him.
He had, and I can say this story now because it's not going to happen. He was retired, but when it ended in Boston, he thought he was done in Boston. Like he thought it was going to end there. We, you know, Paul had to talk him into the trade to Brooklyn. He was on a plane to China with the head of Showtime Sports. And he went up to this guy, Steven Espinosa is his name. He went up to Steven and said, I've got an idea for a show. How about I go to college? You know, KG comes out of high school, college, never went to college. He wanted to go to college, live in the dorm, and let Showtime shoot it.
That'd be hilarious.
I mean, that's gold. Like Showtime, you can say whatever the hell you want.
Exactly. If you could follow him around with a camera and it would be uncensored, it would be the best show in the world.
Oh, can you imagine him in a dorm, like bunk bed of some kind,
pretend backpack walking around campus going to class?
Well, he said he wanted to go to class. He said he wanted to do the whole thing.
Oh, gee.
He said he wanted the whole nine.
That's KG for you, man.
That's a 4-year show that I would sign up for. That would be like I don't know what your favorite show is, but what.
Power.
Okay. Then Game of Thrones for me.
You watch that too?
I watch Game of Thrones.
I knew that was the best series once they cut off Russell Crowe's head. I was like, you can't cut off the main character.
Russell Crowe. Bean. Jeffrey Bean.
No, it's not Jeffrey Bean.
Yeah, it is. It's Jeffrey Bean. Yeah, it's he looks like Russell Crowe, though.
No.
Yeah, the father, Ned Stark.
That's not Russell Crowe. See, I can't even deal with that. You know what I meant, though.
I do.
He's the main character.
Yes. Yeah. But that's what made it awesome.
Like, gee whiz. Yeah, that's my show.
I love shows where anybody can get it.
Yeah.
Like that. Walking Dead was up there.
That's great.
On my list. Yeah. Sons of Anarchy was another one that was wild.
I just started watching The Strain. That's
pretty
good, too.
Yeah. If anyone can get it, any cast member, it makes it awesome. But that KG show would have been like first DVR. Right there, out of his mind.
I'm in top tier. That's hilarious.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
If you're enjoying this podcast, then check out the MMQB podcast with Peter King.
ESPN is aware of my interest, and so they asked, hey, any interest in doing any sideline reporting for any NBA games? And I'm like, yes! Because as you know, Peter, when you get to do something outside your sphere of work, it's exciting.
Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Peter King, wherever you download your shows.
So you get through last year and Tibbs takes the job here. I mean, you knew of him. You played probably 1 year against his teams briefly when he was in Chicago. But I mean, what was your sense there?
You know, I was excited. You know, you get a coach like that, you know, he's so well renowned and you just know of him so well. You know, you want to make a good first impression. So I got to camp early, talked to him on the phone, had my first workout with him. He was trying to kill me that first workout. You know, he wants to see where you're at. And
He tests you.
You know, I was ready for it. You know, I was working out before that. I'm going to be ready for this workout, you know. And best thing, you know, I hit about 15, 16 pull-ups in a row. And I'm thinking, like, I'm killing this workout. You don't know I'm ready. And all he keeps saying is, go harder. I'm like, yo, time out. What else do I got to do? So it was a good, you know, I was during the summer league, you know, went out there and supported the team, practice with them and everything like that. So just getting ready and you just want to make a good first impression.
So he was telling me about the first couple of meetings that he had with the team. The first, did you, he wanted everybody back kind of in Minnesota when he first got the job. Yep. I mean, what was that? Just kind of like an introduction sort of?
He wanted to get everything, the groundwork laid out quick, you know, go through some workouts, wanted to see where everybody was, and just get the team together. You know, he's big in the team mind. We've done a lot of team things, and that's something we haven't done in the past. And I think it's been really good. This group's really close.
You know, he probably came into the first practice having seen every play you've ever made in your life.
He said he watched it like 3 times. Every shot. He said, I've seen every one of your shots. I said, okay. You know, that's a...
I had heard a rumor before I met with him a few weeks back that he had spent his time off watching every game he ever coached for the Bulls. And he was like, yeah, I had some free time on my hands. Every game he ever coached.
Oh my gosh. Man. Yeah, that's him, man. He's in that. And I come back and shoot late. You know, I work out a lot, and he's in there late. So, you know, that's the main thing.
So when you obviously are prepared for the style and how hard he's going to push you, but after talking to him, whether it's that first meeting, summer league, I mean, what did he tell you he wanted from you coming into training camp?
The main thing he said he knew how I was on offense. He wanted to cut down a little bit on, you know, just bad shots, get better. I'm getting more in the offense, and you know, it's understandable. Like, yeah, that's something I've wanted to work on as well. And then the main thing is just continue to buy into the defense he has, and you know, a lot of new strategy, a lot of new terms, and it's helped out a lot. I feel so much more comfortable. I've always felt good on the ball, you know, being able to stay in front of people and use my leg, but off the ball, I never really got taught it, you know, so that was the main thing. And, you know, it's helped a lot, you know, and we're just going to keep getting better at it.
You've had kind of 2.5 different camps, a flip camp, Flip and Sam from last year, and now a Tibbs camp. What makes Tibbs and his camps any different?
You're going hard 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a water break, you know, you're drinking that water fast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I feel like it prepares you for the game. You know, we're really in condition, and, you know, we just got to keep getting better at it. And, you know, buy into that system. But the main thing was we were going hard, you know, and he was on top of you, and he was everything you did, you know, he knew you made a mistake. It might not even been, he was yelling at somebody else, and then he comes back to you and, Zach, you weren't in the right help. It's like, man, I wasn't even in the play, you know, so how'd you know that? So it's a, you got to be on your JOB.
Are you good with that kind of push all the time? He took some heat for it in Chicago a little while, and that's kind of what led to some of the dysfunction with the front office there about how hard he pushed his players there. Mm-hmm. A lot of you guys are similar ages to what he took over in Chicago. I mean, how do you feel about how hard he pushes?
He's fine. For me, it's fine because I can't have anybody push me harder than my dad did. Mm-hmm. You know, I came from, you know, my dad's my best friend. You know, we're tight, and, you know, he pushed me harder than anybody. Got to call it every name in the book, you know. So in that type of toughness, you know, I'm used to it. You know, that won't bug me. I'm, you know, I like being straight up, straightforward. What can I do to get better? So, you know, I really liked it.
You guys did become kind of the storyline over the, you know, that kind of 2 months of the off season where Tibbs comes in. You guys have a ton of young talent on that roster. I mean, did you guys read that stuff at all? I mean, the expectations coming in, did you buy into the hype there a little bit? Did any of you guys buy into that hype?
We bought into it because we know how good we can be, you know, and we still believe in it. You know, we didn't read everything. You know, he was talking. Yeah. He talked, you know, everybody's talking about this, but we haven't done anything yet. Mm-hmm. We need to keep getting better at this and that. And, you know, you never want to take anything for granted. You know, people talking about you is a good thing, but, you know, you got to go out there and prove it. And, you know, we still haven't done that fully yet, and we're going to just continue. You know, it's a long season. We're going to keep going on it.
Yeah, I mean, you must learn something. You know, it's got to be tough losing these end of the game type of situations. Even the Knicks game, the other night. I mean, it's got to be tough doing that. I mean, what you must also learn something from each one of these, because every team goes through it. I mean, the Jazz. I remember watching them a couple of years ago just be brutal in the first half of the season, and then they got a lot better at the end. They figured some stuff out. I mean, Oklahoma City even further back. I mean, Russ and Kevin lost. I think it was like 3-31 or something. They were brutal. So I mean. I mean, but they learned from it. I mean, what are you guys taking away from these games, these tough endings you've had so far?
You know, you can play as good as you want to be, but, you know, one or two possessions can make a game, or, you know, if the energy swings one way or another, you know, you just got to play all 48 and, you know, you just try to get as many good things, more good things than bad things, more winning plays equals more wins. And, we just got to get some more winning plays and, you know, come out of, you know, third quarters have been hard for us. You know, we got to figure that out. You know, we still haven't got the whole grasp on it yet, but, you know, we are going to.
So the dunk contest, third one?
Do not know yet, man. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I have no idea. And then I set the internet on fire on accident because Andrew was recording. So just because I was just practicing some stuff. So I don't even know yet.
It'll what's the thinking there? Like, is it about your health at that time? Is it about maybe not wanting to do this or?
The main thing, man, it's hard to top what I've done. You know, it's like, man, what else can I do? You know, so and it's hard, you know, especially playing more minutes. Mm-hmm. It's going through that's a stretch where you want to be at your best, and I just don't know yet, man. I gotta think about it. You know, it takes a little bit of time to practice, so you know I don't know, but I'm always confident. I think I can do it again. So if I get that in my head, you know, I think it's a possibility.
I think you should do like 6 in a row. Like
that's when, everybody says, just like, go and win like 10.
I'm jumping on that bandwagon then, because you could you could do it, and B, like there would never be any debate over who the greatest dunker is in NBA history. Yeah. Like you could do it before you turn 30.
Yeah,
you'd be good to go.
They're like, Zach, just go in there and do 2 dunks. It doesn't even matter if you win or lose. Just go. It's just, we just want to see you dunk. Like, man, I don't know.
If you could have a one-on-one kind of dunk off against anybody in the NBA, mm-hmm. who would it be?
Prime? Like, could I pick
now? Yeah, if somebody in the NBA that you said, I'll do it if I can go, you know, dunk for dunk with that guy.
The main thing, it was probably Aaron. Mm-hmm. Me and Aaron been knowing each other since high school, and I knew he had a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he had all that, because I'm not a dude that does props.
Yeah.
You know, I've never done that before. Yeah. And that was just so creative. Other dude's probably Andrew Wiggins. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen Andrew do a lot of things just messing around where he doesn't try and he almost makes it. It's like, yo, why are you not doing the dunk contest? You know, we could have a lot of fun. You know, so, you know, Drew can do a lot of things too.
Props are tough. They're hit or miss sometimes.
Exactly.
Like when Dwight came out of the phone booth, I just, God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just don't do that.
Right.
And somebody's coming out dressed up and doing dance moves. Like, I liked the car. I liked some of the stuff that Aaron did. But you can look great doing it, or you can look like a total fool.
I just want to go out there and use your athletic ability and creativity and do a dunk. You mm-hmm. know, I've watched so many, you know, the past old dunk contests. I never really thought about doing that, so I just try to bring my own little flavor into it.
Just take the best dunk from everybody that somebody's done and top it.
Just top it, yeah.
Like the D Brown dunk.
Ain't nobody done before.
Yeah. Who was your favorite dunker, like just watching growing up?
I probably had like 3 or 4. You know, mm-hmm. I was a big Kobe fan. Mm-hmm. Kobe was a big time in game dunker. Mm-hmm. T-Mac, of course, Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. and then.
Yeah, people forget Kobe and T-Mac had some athleticism. Like, they only ridiculous. Think of the last.
Yeah, like, oh my gosh. I got so many dudes I used to watch, man. You know, Stevie Francis was great at dunking, mm-hmm. you know, and he couldn't even palm a ball. And then there's Vince. You know, he topped everybody. I just saw a mixtape on him, and he was doing windmills in the lane.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if there was social media back when they played, like, it would be just completely ridiculous. Like, yeah.
Do you believe Vince is still playing? Like, he wants to keep going, too. He's not anywhere near done.
He's still good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still good, strong.
Like, he'd almost be a model for you in some ways, because – you know, you're ridiculously athletic now. Vince was ridiculously athletic in his early years. He's still, you know, inching towards 40 and like athletic, like more athletic than most guys out there.
And he made a layup against us. I was like, man, would you have dunked that back in your day? He's like, I don't know. I could have tried it though. You know, he's cool. You know, and the main thing, he just knows he's evolved his game to being able to where he's always been a good shooter mm-hmm. and, you know, he's been very good on defense and, you know, uses his strength and his, you know, his mind now to his advantage.
Somebody tweeted something about you with a video in it, the Alex Len dunk that you had against Phoenix, that somebody said that was your first, like, dunk on somebody in the NBA?
Yeah, no. I don't know who said that.
Okay, then that's wrong. I couldn't believe that would be true.
Yeah, maybe most of our games aren't broadcast on ESPN.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've had a lot of dunks in the NBA.
Okay.
So I was looking at that like, no.
But not dunk, like, on somebody. Like
was probably the best poster I've had.
Okay, yeah.
Because that was, I went straight up by the body. It was almost a foul. Mm-hmm. You know, I've dunked on a lot of people in the NBA, you know, tip dunks, alley-oops, mm-hmm. you know, like just go by them and dunk. But that was a body-to-body, go straight up. That was probably one of my first ones of doing that in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've dunked on a lot of people.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Before I let you go, you know, you guys have that kind of young team that you can see progressing the way that Oklahoma City did and the way I'm seeing kind of the Jazz do it now. The unknown dynamic is the locker room and how you guys interact with each other and like each other. I mean, how Are you guys close? Could you see the core of this group being together for 5, 6, 7 years or beyond?
That's the main thing. You just want to be able to keep everybody together. Mm-hmm. You know, we have such good talent, you know, so many other goals and things like that. It's a hard thing to keep everyone together. I think we can. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all close. We're all the same age group. We all hang out together. Mm-hmm. You know, when people talk about hanging out, you know, we go play video games. You know, we all on a group text of what time are you going to go play Call of Duty or something like that. So, you know, we go into the I go to Andrew's room. He's playing video games. I hop on the game with him. So, you know, we're all the same age group. And it's, you know, I think we can.
Yeah, people think that a lot of you young guys out are just like in the club every place you go. Frank Kaminsky was telling me the other day. Yeah. He just goes out and buys scratch tickets.
Yeah.
It's like his thing and he does his off.
Yeah. You might win a couple extra bucks, man. You never know.
Well, he was telling me that if anything is under, he and a couple of guys on the team, that they have like this, they just put money into a pot. Mm. And anything that they win under $500 has to go back in the pot. So nobody can keep anything unless it's more than $500.
That's smart. So you just keep the game going.
They're going for the big win, though. Yeah. Like, they're going for the big ticket win.
Keep going. Yeah, you keep going. No, okay. That's fine.
Well, Zach, thank you for jumping by here. I know it's a game night tomorrow. Thanks for stopping in the studio. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you, man. It was easy.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Zach LaVine for joining the show. A reminder that you can download this podcast and other archive podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, really anywhere you can download podcasts. If you like it, post a comment, give us a rating. You know I appreciate it. While you're there, check out The Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick and The Vertical Podcast with Woj. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.